È la lega in cui le migliori 18 squadre d'Europa si sfidano nel corso di una lunga e stancante stagione che culmina con una serie di finali che rappresentano il punto più alto del basket europeo. Il motto è I Feel Devotion e oggi vi portiamo nel competitivo mondo della Turkish Airlines EuroLeague. Nel corso della prima stagione di 3PO Podcast abbiamo già avuto il piacere di parlare con due colleghi, chiamiamoli così con molto rispetto, che i campi di EuroLeague li hanno già calcati sin dall'inizio, nel caso di Roberto Chiari, e che comunque continuano a fare la storia dell'arbitraggio del nostro sport, come Luigi Lamonica. Prima di entrare nella conversazione che tanto state aspettando, scusatemi, voglio ricordarvi che come al solito per gli ospiti internazionali, questo è già il secondo, l'intervista che ascolterete tra poco è in inglese. Troverete però sulla pagina dell'episodio sul sito 3popodcast.it la trascrizione integrale dell'intervista, sia in italiano che in inglese. Oltre al testo, se preferite, troverete anche il video, un video YouTube con l'audio dell'intervista e i sottotitoli, sia in inglese che in italiano, ovviamente. Insomma, non avete scuse, non potete perderla. Torniamo a noi. Il nostro ospite di oggi ha iniziato ad arbitrare a 18 anni e nel 2000 ha arbitrato la prima vera partita di EuroLeague tra Real Madrid e Olympiacos. Dopo un passaggio come capo del settore arbitrale FIBA, dopo i 15 anni di lavoro di Costas Rigas, ha preso in mano nel 2015 la guida del gruppo arbitrale di EuroLeague. Oggi è con noi Richard Stokes. Thanks, Richard. Thanks for joining us for today's episode. It's really, really important and helpful to have you here. And I'm pretty sure that this will be an extremely useful conversation. As anticipated, you this year we're trying to go deeper into some specific topics, not just a casual conversation as we did before. So thanks again for accepting my invitation for today.
Pleasure.
So as any good and regular game, let's start with a bit of warm-up. Everything is happening against around us. We still don't know exactly how things will going on this year for the season, how they will evolve exactly, but likely we saw already these two pre-season tournaments. We're back, as EuroLeague says. So I know that you started since late August already with a remote meeting with the officiating staff. Can you tell us maybe some from your point of view, considering also what you've discussed, what can we expect from the referees and from the officials in this upcoming season, and if there are going to be any major change to what we can see from a technical point of view, or maybe just this extremely intense, usual and intense work on the details?
Well, I think, you know, this is going to be a different season for everybody, you know, for us, for the teams, the players, coaches, the clubs, the administrators, because of the, you know, the current situation we all find ourselves in. And so I think if there's one thing that's sure, it's going to be a very different season. And I think the way in which we work, and the way in which people, you know, are part of EuroLeague basketball games, you know, even the experience is going to be different as well. In terms of our preparation, of course, it wasn't the normal preparation that we would have, where we usually come together for 3 days in one central venue to review last season and obviously to define the points of emphasis that we want people to focus on for the coming season. Having said that, you know, the online meetings that we conducted over the same 3 days, I think went pretty well. And we already had some experience of running meetings like that when we had our annual head coaches meeting earlier on in the summer, which was also done in the same format. And that's probably the part which drives most of the discussion, which leads to the points of emphasis and the guidelines that we want and we expect to see during the season. So just to give you some background, at the end of each season, in the summer, when everything's kind of done and dusted, we always meet with the head coaches that will be coaching for the forthcoming season. So in some cases, it's new coaches or coaches are at different clubs. And of course, those of them that were involved in our competitions, it's an opportunity to get their feedback, to find out from them what they thought was good, what was not so good, where the referees need to work, or where they would like to see some clarification. And of course, this year we have some changes to the rules, the official basketball rules. So we had to discuss those about, you know, to inform them what they could expect with the changes in the rules. And so that really acts as a driver to everything that we then go back to the referees with in August and tell them what we're going to do, because that's something we've agreed with the teams and we have to match their expectations. And you know, of course, it's not just their expectations. We've got to protect the game. So, you know, coaches may have their wishes on what they would like to see. Some of it might be possible. Some of it might not be possible. But I think generally speaking, in the 4.5 years I've been involved in this position, we've never really gone to any meetings where there's been some major differences of opinion. And I think probably it would be unusual if we got to the end of the season and we did have completely different opinions. I think that, you know, there'll be something wrong with that. But very often the things the coaches want to discuss, you know, they're already on our agenda, and probably vice versa. The things that we want to discuss, they've probably already discussed themselves during the season. And so I think from that point of view, the groundwork that we did, the preparation that we did, was pretty much the same. And although we've got some new rules, the new rules, you know, should be implemented fairly easily. I don't think there's anything major that would cause any big discussion or any big problems during the games. I think everyone's got a good grasp of what's expected in terms of the application of the new rules. And I think there's a couple of things in there which are really good. I think it'll really help the officiating collective in what they want to do. But from our side, there are a couple of areas that we particularly, you know, felt needed addressing within our competition. And one of those was, coincidentally, active shooting, but not because of the new rule, but because we felt that we weren't always protecting jump shooters enough. You know, the game has changed in the last 3 or 4 years as much more of a perimeter-based game. You've only got to look at the statistics to see that, you know, there's more perimeter shots now. Mid-range jump shots is a dying area of the game. And I think that also is reflected at both ends of the floor. You know, teams are more geared up now to take in three-point shots. And defensively, you know, it's a struggle for some teams to defend the three-point shot. So we have a lot more perimeter play and a lot more jump shots that we need to take care of. So we felt that was an area we need to focus on. The other area that we spoke about with the coaches was off-ball, where we feel there's too many, and they agreed, you know, there was too much contact, too much illegal contact off the ball, particularly with players being grabbed and held and redirected or delayed on cuts and screens. So that's something that, although we made some progress last year, we felt we still had to make some more progress. So we've got to continue to be focused on that. And then the last thing, and that probably comes back to the first point I mentioned about jump shots, is play around the perimeter. We also became aware during the season of an increase in the amount of illegal actions by ball handlers, the dribblers, or people receiving the ball, because, you know, spacing is so important now with a perimeter game or with pick and roll game. We saw on a number of occasions perimeter players creating space for themselves to make a pass or to start a dribble, moving their feet illegally, either shuffling their feet or changing their pivot foot. And that happened quite a lot. I'm not saying it was a conscious thing, but I think when the defense is extended, players then looking to try and create some space in which to work, to operate. And we felt that was an issue, and so did the coaches. So those are probably the three main areas that we spoke to them about. And there's always other things that come along at the same time, you know, in terms of quality of our play calling, which we think is pretty good, but there's always room for improvement. And I think, you know, overall, that those are the three areas that we wanted to discuss and put on the table and let the coaches know that's what we were going to be working on, and that was very much, you know, echoed by the feedback they gave us from the season, from their experiences as well.
I totally understand that it is really a great insight into this world and how the communication with especially with coaches it's happening in an organization like EuroLeague. Yes, you might argue that it might be easier to have this kind of sessions, discussion, and evaluation together. Also, evolution of the way of officiating together based on the feedback in such a high level, high quality, but also restricted organization. But that's really interesting, and I can definitely see all the points that you're talking about. I can picture in my mind examples. I personally believe what you said, the playing off the ball, it's becoming day after day more and more interesting and more important, especially you mentioned the players got delayed in the direction of the ball. And I think that the more this game evolves, the more these small delays on the off the ball players are becoming extremely fundamental for the rest of the play. So I think that's an extremely good point.
Yeah, I think also, you know, we have to, let's say, reset our expectations a little bit, you know, as an officiating group, you know, particularly in some of the contact plays that we see where we, you know, typically, obviously, there's a lot of pick and roll play right now. I don't think that's going to go away. And therefore, in screen plays, you know, where sometimes defenders are able to slip the screen, get over or under the screen, you know, and there's no delay, that's fine. And I think on other occasions when there is a, you know, some contact, and then we're trying to make a judgment on whether it's illegal or not, I think many times officials in general, I'm not just talking, you know, from basketball, I see everywhere, I think on a lot of occasions, you know, referees are trying to look for reasons not to call a foul. And I think, you know, particularly on off-ball play, we should be looking for reasons to call fouls. Now, because we want to have a good feel for the game, and we don't want to have a start-stop game. We want to have a good, you know, good game flow. But we've also got to be aware that, you know, some of these contacts affect, you know, the rhythm, speed, balance, quickness of the players. And if, you know, one of those four things is affected, then, you know, that should be an indicator that there's a problem and we need to probably be calling a foul. You know, screening's difficult, but I think we can make progress on that. And off the ball in general, I think we just need to, you know, to reset ourselves a little bit to make sure we're clear, which hopefully we are now after the meetings. You know, we're very clear now what's involved with you know, pick and rolls and screening plays and time and distance, players with or without the ball, and those are the things we revisited with the referees to make sure that we're all on the same page when the season starts.
And I think it's also, when we're talking about this apparently tiny details, it's something that comes even harder to put in place, because it's possibly the least evident things that are happening on court. So once, if you try to regulate or you have a discussion about a sportsmanlike foul, that's there, that's clear, evident for everyone. But when you're talking about this kind of play, this kind of the time and space arguments, when you were introducing the delay or these tiny calls that are off balls and nobody's looking at, it's really a bit harder to sell these calls. Maybe, of course, players on court, they should know what they're doing, coaches too. But let's remember, we also have the audience, all the people that are outside of the court, they should follow up what's happening. And that those are maybe really hard calls to sell, or at least to let other people understand the importance of those.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we often talk in officiating about, you know, calling the obvious. In as much as, you know, when there's an obvious foul, an obvious violation, we shouldn't let that go. We shouldn't miss it. On the other hand, you're quite right. You know, some of the subtle things that happen, some of the, how can I put it, the dark arts of basketball off the ball.
Yes.
You know, that's stuff that's only apparent sometimes to the players, the coaches, and the referees, and it's not so apparent to the fans. But I'm a big believer in, you know, in what we apply should be understandable for the fans. You know, just as the rule book should be understandable. I mean, you know, the rule book, you know, in some places is complicated, and there's good reason for it, because we do have complicated situations. But, you know, good rules, and I think we have a pretty good rule book right now, good rules are easily understood. And then when a referee has to apply it, it should be easily understood by the people that are watching the game or participating in the game. But as you said, you know, some of the more subtle actions are more difficult to spot, or maybe not immediately obvious to people participating. But in the modern world that we live, unfortunately, there's no real hiding place. You know, if, you know, everything now is on camera, you know, if we have, you know, 7 or 9 or 11 cameras on a EuroLeague game, you know, we're going to find the mistakes, and so are the teams, and so are the fans. So although some of these things are subtle and perhaps you know, not so obvious, the most important thing is, do they have an effect on the play? And if they have an effect on the play, if someone gains an unfair advantage, or someone's, you know, a disadvantage is created outside of the rules, then, you know, we've got to be very clear that we're going to have that under control. And it should be the technical skill of the players that you know, that win the contest, not necessarily the brute force or the physical contact. We have a physical game internationally in Europe. I think that's part of European basketball, and we don't want to see that disappear. But I think it's got to be physical in the right way, and it's got to be physical in the right places. I think, you know, we want to see, you know, physical matchups, competitive matchups between the best players, whether it be in the post or with the guards. But it's got to be tough play and not rough play. And so long as it's tough, I think it becomes a spectacle, you know, both for the players and the fans, and that's a good thing. I think if it becomes rough, then, you know, it becomes actually at times, I think, boring for the fans and, you know, in the end, maybe dangerous for the players. So we've got a duty of care to have a, you know, a good tough game, but not a rough game.
Yeah, basically bring it to the hard game and not the dirty one. I think it's a,
exactly.
It's a pretty good goal. I also read in the press release right after you had the meeting with the officials about the communication on court. And I think that's something that in these years, it has been more and more pushed on for officials. I think it's, I don't want to say there is something new, because maybe it was something new a few years ago, but it's something that is getting finally the attention that it desires. So I think that to have a complete referee, 100% good referee, that person should really work on the communication. So I will leave it up to you if you can give us some tips and some your main points to generally behave in a good manner on court.
Well, you know, we have certain expectations from our officials in terms of the way they communicate, whether it be verbal or non-verbal. But we also have an expectation in terms of how they interact with the players. Now, that part of that could be communication. On the other hand, it could also be non-communication. But in the end, you know, we have, as I said, these expectations that we want them to actually be more communicative than less. And that doesn't mean that we're going to have a chat show for an hour and 30 minutes where, you know, everyone can give their opinion and we'll talk about it all night. But one of the things that, you know, we've been very clear about since I joined the EuroLeague, which is that, you know, if coaches or players ask a reasonable question, they deserve a reasonable answer. You know, if something's unclear, or they have a question on the rule or the interpretation, or they don't understand what's happened, then we should be ready to address that. We should be ready to face up to the fact that maybe we can help each other in understanding what we're doing. I think one of the things we have to be very clear about is, you know, we're in a sports contest and both teams want to win, both coaches want to win. But the way that coaches or players behave in a game, you know, doesn't define who they are. That's part of the heat of the competition. Just as much as, you know, the way that referees behave during the game doesn't define who they are as a person. But it does mean that we've got to find the right way in which to work together. And in many ways, you know, a little bit like national competitions, you know, if I look back to when I was an international referee, and, you know, at that time you wouldn't see the same teams internationally very often. If you saw them twice in a season, that would be a lot. If it was three times, it'd be quite unusual. But of course, the domestic teams you have in your national competition, you see them often, you see them a lot, and you get to know the coaches and the players over the years. So you need to have a different relationship with them because there's more familiarity. And familiarity is not a bad thing. What it means is, you know, you've got to find a way to work together because you're seeing each other that much more often. Now, internationally, that probably was not the case. But now with the EuroLeague, you know, now we have a smaller group of referees and a pretty fixed number of A-licensed clubs, plus the other clubs that play in the EuroLeague and in the EuroCup. We're a relatively small community. And so, you know, again, we see each other a lot. And we've got to find the correct way to work together. And as I say to the coaches, you know, it's okay if you ask a question and we'll give you an answer. We may not agree. It might not be what you want to hear. It might not be what you expected, and that's okay. We don't have to agree. We don't have to go out for dinner after the game and, you know, be buddy-buddy. That's not what it's about. But there has to be an understanding in the game, and part of that is how we do it. And we've worked quite hard with the referees in recent years to ensure that when they engage coaches or players, they engage them at the right moment in the right way, that the coaches also clearly understand the boundaries. Because we have boundaries, we have guidelines. Coaches wish to communicate in the wrong way, then that's going to be dealt with. And equally, if referees communicate in the wrong way, then that's going to be dealt with by the officiating department. So we feel that there's room for growth there, and that's one of the things we've been working on, particularly in our pre-season meeting with a sports psychologist. And as we were at great pains to try and explain to our referees, it's not a problem what they're doing. I mean, in terms of the decisions for unsportsmanlike fouls, technical fouls, or this isn't the problem. What we want them to think about is the delivery. So, you know, if a coach gets a technical foul for crossing the line, or a player gets a technical foul for something they say, there's no question that most of the time we're getting that right. What we want them to do is to improve the delivery of that, to be neutral, to be less confrontational, to not be putting petrol on the fire, for want of a better phrase. And I think for the most part, we do that, but there's some more things we can do. And I think we can do it better, and we can do it in such a way that nobody has even the slightest feeling or thought that anyone's taking it personally. We understand that coaches will advocate for players. They will defend their players. There'll be reasons why they do it, which are unknown to us. They will advocate for their teams, and that's fine. That's absolutely fine. But in the same way, we're here to apply the rules and see fair play. And I think that's the last point about all of this. You know, if we treat people in the same way on both teams, whether it's play calling, whether it's fouls, whether it's criteria, violations, or the way in which we communicate with them, if that's felt and deemed to be fair, to be the same on both sides, then it's deemed to be fair. And if people think we're being fair, then we've got a great chance to do a good job. Because in the end, that's what we want to be judged upon, is being fair in the competition, in everything that we do.
In short, I think we can almost sum up all of this in just one word, which is probably respect. Respect for the others, respect for the work of the others, what they're doing. So it's probably easier to see this kind of approach in a competition like EuroLeague, because you're all between professionals. So we know that whatever we're doing in that moment is part of my job, is part of the coach's job, is part of the player's job. So as you would do in any other work environment, you will have to treat the other people with respect. You will have to address their concern, address their opinions, understand if they're giving you a good suggestion or not, and discuss about it. As you said, you don't have to necessarily agree with that, but the discussion is fundamental. And it's not necessarily wrong if you put this in the other context of the other championship, or just because we have many, many followers that are still in the minor leagues, in a regional and national competition, where probably you feel less that factor of being a professional, being at work. For that time that you're in court, for that time that you are in the gym, in the sport hall, where you're refereeing two teams, you're the referee, coaches are the coaches, are not what they are usually outside. So for the time being, you need to be a professional. You need to address those other people with the same respect that you would like for yourself, and with the respect of any other person involved in this temporary job, in this temporary activity, which is the basketball game.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you make. And, I think, if I'm perfectly honest with you, I think respect is a word that's probably used too much, but I understand why. But I always think we have to put it into some context, because very often you hear, from different people, fans, coaches, players, wherever it might be, the referees didn't show our team any respect tonight. And I find that very hard to really translate, because what it's really saying then is that, we have different standards. And as I often say to people involved in basketball who use that comment with me, I'll say, well, if you really believe that, then it's then automatically saying that a referee's gone out there to be against you in some. Now, I don't believe for one minute that anyone does that. And I also believe, for the most part, you know, the fans and the coaches and the players don't believe that either. But of course, we're in an emotional state sometimes when we say some things, referees as well. And so therefore, I understand the use of that word, you know, an English word across, you know, umpteen different cultures and languages across Europe. It, it can mean different things. But I think it, respect's not really the right way to look at it. I think everyone respects everyone else. But I think we're also talking about people that make human mistakes. And, you know, players make mistakes, coaches make mistakes, and for sure, referees make mistakes. You know, that that's just a fact of life. What we want to do is reduce the number of mistakes. Absolutely. We do want to treat everyone empathetically, not sympathetically, but with empathy to understand the other side. You know, and we spoke about communication. A lot of that is to actually do with listening and less to do with talking. So you're right, I think, in the principles, because, you know, respect can be listening to my point of view, understanding my point of view, having empathy with, you know, the challenges that I'm facing either as a coach or player, as a referee. And I think that there's something in that which is probably more accurate in terms of describing relationship that needs to exist. You know, respect needs to be earned, that's for sure, on both sides of the equation with officiating and teams. But I think it's much more about understanding that, you know, people are trying to do their best. And if they don't do their best, it's because they're human. It's not because of any disrespect, if I can use that word. And I know that when I talk to people, no one's suggesting that people are being consciously disrespectful. But of course, if we're saying people lack respect, so when you're being disrespectful, people very rarely say that. It's a strange conversation. But I understand the way in which people use that word, but I think there needs to be some context to it. And I don't think any of our clubs gets more or less respect from the referees. And I think there's one thing that has come to the front, and especially in the last couple of years with the True League, is that it's pretty difficult to win back-to-back games when you're playing in the same week. Very difficult. And whether, you know, number one in the league is playing number, you know, 18 in the league, or number five is playing, you know, number 15, you know, the rankings don't count for an awful lot. It's a highly competitive competition. And in some ways, I think it's a good thing, because I think it just shows that despite the budgets or the clubs or whoever it might be, people know that if they work hard, the team that plays the best on the night is the team that probably is going to win and would deserve to win. I think reputations count for very little now. It's absolutely how the teams play on the night. And I think the clubs and the coaches understand if they have a bad night, you know, it's a very, very, very tough competition to be in if you have a bad night. And it's not, mostly not the fault of the referees. Almost all of the time, it's not.
Yeah, I mean, in this kind of a competition, as you said, it's probably, yes, the best team will win, but also the team that has less problems or less issues going in the season. So, as you said, like tiny things that are really a bad night may change the outcome of a game. So probably it's not just having the best team, but also is managing and keeping the team its best in every single occasion. And that also, I think, works pretty well for referees. You just not have to be the best referee, but you also have to be the most consistent referee, and you always have to be ready, even if it's the third game of the week. You have to be there, as you were in the first one, as you were in the second one. Yeah, otherwise, even if you're the best, but you're not consistent, you're not ready every day, that will be no use.
Yeah, and I think, you know, more and more of our officials are dedicating themselves to being, you know, professional referees as much as possible. You know, I've seen a big change in the culture of the referees in the last couple of years, where, you know, they're taking much better care of their bodies, they're taking much better care of their rest and their diet and their training regime. You know, some of that has been pushed by us, and some of it has been self-driven. You know, I think they recognize that to go and referee two or three games in a 7-day period is demanding. You know, it's demanding. And you know, in Europe, it's very demanding when you add in the travel as well. The travel internationally, and also, you know, sometimes the travel at home. If you're traveling from one end of Italy to the other, or one end of Spain to the other, or, you know, in some of the regional leagues from one end of the Balkans to the other, or across the Baltics and Russia for the VTB League, you know, it's a big commitment. And I think that, you know, referees recognize now more than ever that they need to take care of their bodies, And in doing so, you know, take care of their mental approach to the game. You know, I'm very clear about this. You know, if you're tired at the end of a game, if you're not in good shape, you know, you've got a greater risk of making mistakes. And that's what we don't want. We, you know, I can live with mistakes, but not mistakes that decide the game, and not mistakes that are continually repeated. But I think that's also been a shift. You know, with the upturn in the level of the competition that we've seen, there's also been an upturn in the approach that the referees have actually, I would say, mostly driven themselves to do as well, you know, albeit with our guidance and our support.
What I think it has become clear in the last years is that being a referee is not about that game, but it really requires 100% of the involvement of your whole body and mind, even when you're resting, even the rest of the week. Let's say if you're just refereeing in the weekends, for example, in a national competition, that is not anymore a role that is only active in the weekend. It's active every day with the nutrition, with the how you rest, how you sleep, how you train, even if it's just for the one game in the weekend. So I think that really it's starting to be perceived at all kind of levels, and probably, you know, it's becoming more and more involvement, probably more commitment from part of the people that want to do this job, but at the same time even more remunerating, because eventually you're living a better life regardless of the level that you can referee if you commit with your whole body and mind to this magic activity.
Sure. And I think, you know, referees see that. It's you know, it's a nice way to earn a living if you can do that. And, you know, in some parts of Europe it's more possible than others, and you know, certainly our competition is part of that. And I think, you know, more and more people, you know, look at it less as a part-time job or a job they fit in between another profession, and they look at, you know, refereeing in the EuroLeague as a profession of some kind. I mean, of course, you know, it's not quite the same as a it's very different to a regular 9-to-5 job, but it's different also in as much as, you know currently, you know, you can work in an office till you're 60, 65, 67 if you want to do that, if you have to do that. Much more challenging to do that on the court. And so, you know, you have, like the athletes, you have a relatively limited time span in which you can work, albeit longer than the athletes. But I think despite all of that, you know, we still have a very committed group of officials that, you know, are very clear about the points you mentioned, taking care not only of their bodies and their rest and their preparation, but also their diet and their mental health. And I mean that in a positive way. I mean, you know, in terms of being rested and prepared and being very focused for the challenge in front of them. And that also means that the mental preparation which goes into the game has also shifted into a new area where I think referees see the mental training as something which is integral to what they do, especially at the elite level.
Slightly changing topic, but not even that much. I remember in one of the webinars you gave in course of the non-season that we had in the spring, you were talking about some criteria or something about the selection of the referee, just spotting the good referee and what you would like to have with you in the team officiating the EuroLeague. And you mentioned the fact that rather than having the already achieved a referee, the one that has already reached the highest quality that he can get, even if it's extremely high, you'd rather maybe have somebody that had expressed a lot of potential, that you know that person can get better and better, even if maybe it's a bit more unexperienced, maybe a more junior role or something along that way. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that was a pretty good point, and I was happy to hear that.
Yes, I mean, I think, you know, if we've got, as we believe, you know, the best club competition outside of the USA, then, you know, we need the best officials. And I think for the most part, you know, on our staff of 70, you know, have we got the best 70 in Europe? Probably not. More or less, yes. But obviously there's a group there that may not be as good as some of those guys just outside the 70 that are on our roster. But we feel they've got the potential to be better than that. And so I think also, you know, without getting into the politics of the sport, I think also referees are, you know, as they're climbing through their national competitions and then looking to go, you know, to start, you know, to hopefully pursue an international career, you know, there's some pretty obvious choices for them in terms of the direction they might want to go in. And so, you know, we believe if we can find referees And we scout, you know, a lot of referees. You know, every year we're scouting, just as, you know, just as coaches are scouting players, we're scouting referees. You know, if we feel we can find someone that's has the right fundamentals, has the capacity to improve, has a good understanding of the game, and more than anything else, is, you know, is coachable. Is somebody's coachable? That's and also they have an understanding of what coaching is. You know, what they have to do to be coached, rather than just be told what to do. There's, you know, there's two different things. And so in that respect, we are looking for probably something a little bit different than maybe traditionally we would have done. But I also think that, you know, we've got a very good level of competition, and, you know, we need to find people and develop them ourselves to be ready for our competitions. So I think that's our responsibility. I think that's our responsibility to the clubs that play in our competition. And, you know, as I often say to young referees that join us, you know, we've scouted you, and we've scouted you for some time. We're hopefully not bringing you here to find out if you're good enough. You know, our goal is to bring the people that we believe will be good enough, or will be good enough now and much better in the future. But I don't think it's fair to bring someone in for a year or two to see if maybe they can do it, maybe they can't. And then after a couple of years, you know, we have to go in different directions. I don't think that's fair. And I think we have to do our kind of due diligence in terms of selecting the right people. And the other part of it, of course, is the referee's personality off the floor. You know, we need good communicators. People with life experience is also good. But I think probably good communicators and the ability to be open and coachable are some of the aspects we really look for. And of course, it goes without saying, you know, they need to be team players. If we go back 30 or 40 years, two-person officiating, you'd find there was probably a dominant referee on the court and someone that played, you know, the follower role. I think until you got to the end of the competitions, you know, Final Fours, and, you know, then you get all those kind of guys together, very, very good referees. I'm not taking anything away from any of my colleagues or predecessors, but it was a different time. And, you know, strong personalities and characters are very important. For us, it's the same. We want people with character. We want people with personality. We want people that, you know, serve the game first, put the team second, and put themselves after those two. We want to develop them individually, but we want to develop them within a team. And we want to develop them in such a way that they serve the game and that they do serve the game. So, yeah, I think we are, you know, looking for, you know, different people to the kind of people I looked for 4 or 5 years ago. But that's also a reflection of, you know, the kind of referees that are out there right now.
Absolutely. So I think that's also basically the whole concept of scouting itself. If scouting will be just going to look for the best player out there at that moment, that would be extremely easy. But scouting is really understanding the potential, looking into the people and understanding where you can go with those people. Also, just to close what you just said, like, not just leaders being referee, but also being team player, which is, I think, an extremely good and nice message to pass along. So thanks for this.
You're very welcome.
So Richard, thanks a lot for this chat. It was extremely useful. We went from the technical part to the personality part to just the game of basketball. So thanks again for being with us, and I wish you a great season.
Pleasure. Thanks very much for having me, and good luck to everyone out there. Stay safe.
Sono strafelice di aver potuto avere ad inizio stagione un personaggio del calibro di Richard Stokes, che di fatto sta guidando e guida ormai da 5 anni la squadra arbitrale della migliore competizione al di fuori degli Stati Uniti. Ovviamente, se preferite il basket europeo, per voi potrebbe benissimo essere anche la miglior competizione al mondo, ma lo dico quasi sottovoce e lasciamo via queste polemiche e queste considerazioni. Torniamo a noi. Come accennato all'inizio, troverete la traduzione sia in formato testuale che in formato video sulla pagina di questo episodio all'indirizzo 3podcast.it/12. Vi rinnovo l'invito, come al solito, a seguire i nostri social Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, abbiamo tutto per avere accesso a più contenuti e più notizie e rimanere aggiornati sul mondo dell'arbitraggio. Noi ci risentiamo tra 2 settimane con la seconda sessione del quarto angolo con WeRef.it. Anche questa seconda sessione sarà dedicata alle nuove regole FIBA del 2020 e andate subito a ripassare e ad ascoltare il primo episodio se non lo avete fatto. Noi ci sentiamo tra 2 settimane insieme con 3PO Podcast. Alla prossima!